Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet.
And I'm Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on several acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hello, Carol. How does your garden grow?
Hello, Dee. It grows late fall.
Which means what?
Well, after a very unseasonably warm spell, we had actual wintry weather. We didn't have snow or anything, but it was cold again and rainy and cloudy and just kind of blah last week.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But that's okay. I still got... and don't tell anybody this, but I did go ahead and clean up my perennial borders because there were some afternoons that were decent. And I thought, I just want this stuff out of here. And I know you're supposed to leave it for the bugs and the spiders. And it's like, well, they can live in the chippings that are in the compost pile right now. Done.
Yeah. I'm going to have to clean up some of mine. Normally I leave it all, but my fence fell over when the ice storm happened and it crushed my grass. I also found yesterday that, I lost two more Japanese maples and, the hydrangea, I think it's a paniculata, but don't quote me on that. It's hydrangea bobo. And, I think it's got a dumb name, but that's okay because I'm probably going to have to dig it up now because I found three of them that were just broken to pieces. I mean, split down the middle of the main stems. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I don't think
it does.
They're salvageable.
Well, if you probably know that.
Maybe.
But you have some good news on here.
I do have some good news. You just reminded me about my grass because you cleaned up your border. I got Meyer lemons for the first time. I've had a Meyer lemon tree for about 5 years. And never got lemons before, but thank you, honeybees. I got a bunch of lemons. I think we had 6 or 7 off a little bitty tree.
Wow.
And so, Yeah, isn't that cool?
That is very cool.
I also got limes. I got little key limes in my greenhouse, too, that I'm getting ready to take off. But it got cold in there, so my orange tree lost all its leaves. So we'll see if I have oranges in the spring. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of my bratty niece that moved to New Orleans. They bought this house, and it had a lemon tree in the back, and they had, like, I don't know, 3 gallons of lemon juice they squeezed. They were really proud of and froze. I'm like, what person needs 3 gallons of lemon juice?
Well, you could make lemonade.
A lot of lemonade.
That would be awesome. You're just saying she's bratty because you wish you had a lemon tree, too.
Something like that.
Something like that. Anyway, I have a few more paper whites to plant. And a few more amaryllis, and we're going to talk about Christmas trees today, and I'll tell you what I decided.
Yeah, let's do our quote, and then we'll head on into Christmas trees. Ready?
Yep.
Freshly cut Christmas trees, smelling of stars and snow and pine resin, inhale deeply and fill your soul with wintry night. John J. Gedd.
Okay, I love that quote. That is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
That could be framed.
So, yes, here it is, mid-November, and we are talking about Christmas trees. It's because my neighbors are all putting up their lights. I'm going to put my lights up this week. But so tell us about your Christmas tree decision.
So first we should say that we're both Catholics. So traditionally there's the season of Advent, and we really don't start celebrating Christmas in the Catholic calendar until Christmas Day, or really Christmas Eve. So
right.
There's a bunch of Catholics that don't do Christmas trees until the night before Christmas. I'm not one of those Catholics.
Me neither.
I put up my Christmas tree usually mid-December or like the first week of December. We used to have this great Christmas party. We also didn't have a grandchild named Madeline. And Madeline, who we call Maddie, is now completely mobile. And my Christmas tree, as you know from years past, has tinsel and shiny brights, which are very breakable. So I've had to rethink my Christmas tree options.
Right, because you didn't like my option to put like a little cage around your tree. You didn't like that option at all.
No, the whole point of my Christmas tree is to sit and gaze upon it and wonder, and I can't do that with a baby gate. I just can't. So I talked about buying a live Christmas tree that I could plant outside, and you reminded me that doesn't work so well.
No, it doesn't, because if you're going to get a bald and burlap Christmas tree that's, you know, or in a container grown Christmas
pot,
tree.
Yeah.
You really only want it inside for a couple of days at most.
Because what happens to it, Carol?
Well, it just starts to dry out.
And drop its needles.
Yeah, dries out, drops its needles. And you really have to have the hole dug. You would dig the hole now and then take that thing in on Christmas Eve, take it out the day after Christmas. And plant it right away. And then still, I think it's sort of iffy if it's going to make it.
So that's a lot of trouble. And I don't want to do that. And
that root ball is heavy, too. Oh, my gosh.
They are really heavy. The bigger the tree, the heavier the tree. I did see some really cute ones at a local nursery that were already in pots that were, you know, doable. But again, they were blue spruce. No, I didn't even see any Carolina cypress, which do well here. I said Carolina cypress. Carolina is the name of one of them. Arizona cypress. I think what I'm going to do. Okay, so I thought about all that. I could have bought those. They were about $180, which, you know, is not that bad for a tree, but not that great either. But the thought of just bringing it in for a couple of hours and then hauling it back outside and digging a hole and putting it. No, I ain't doing all that.
No, nobody's doing all that. I saw cut trees for sale. These were spruces in front of the grocery store, and they were only like 3 foot tall. And I'm like, this is way too early to get a cut tree and take it inside. That thing, I mean, the last time I had a live tree, I had to add water every morning and every night because it just sucks it up in the dry house.
It does, because you've got the heat on. And they're also a fire hazard. I mean, I'm not saying that people shouldn't have live trees. I have a lot of friends who go out to a tree farm and cut trees. And that's fine, too. But I'm allergic to them anyway, so I don't know what I was thinking. I have to use an artificial tree because I'm allergic to real trees.
So are you going to put up your artificial tree and just not put the shiny brights on it?
No, I bought a flocked artificial tree this morning.
So... I'm sorry, Dee. So I need to back up and understand this. So the whole thing started, you were going to have a bald burlap tree, and then I reminded you that those are iffy. And
they are. They are.
And then you realized that you couldn't get a cut tree because you're allergic to those.
Right. My mother reminded me. There was a year she had to take all my ornaments off my tree for me. It's a long story.
And then you said, so you're back to an artificial tree, which you own an artificial tree. But then you decided because you couldn't put your shiny brights on, you had to get a different artificial tree. Have I got the whole thing sorted out?
I got a flocked artificial tree. So my tree is frosted, actually. They call it frosted. And it looks like it's been snowed on. And all I'm going to put on it are red bows and cardinals.
That'll be pretty and light.
Won't that be pretty? And also, it's not breakable. And see, if you put tinsel on a tree, it stays on your tree forever. So if you decided to tinsel a tree, you got to tinsel it forever. So it would have looked funny this year. And so I just went online and I ordered the tree I always wanted. And it's going to have white lights. And I ordered the cardinals off of, you know, the online store where everybody orders. And I ordered red bows. And it's going to be really pretty. And it'll be simple to put up in the year of COVID. It usually takes me 2 days to decorate my tree. It won't take me a couple of hours this time.
Simple is better. Now, I'm putting up my outdoor lights later this week because it's going to be back in the 60s. I got to catch up with the neighbors.
We are too.
And okay, I haven't decided about a tree. Sometimes I do a little ceramic tree like my grandma had.
Yeah, those are really back in style. And it's funny because my husband hates them, but I think they're super cute. My mom made one. She had one and my grandmother had one. Yeah, because they did ceramics. So everything you guys wanted to know about Christmas trees, live and fake, you can find out from the Illinois Extension, right?
I pulled up this thing. And so did you know that there are 350 million Christmas trees growing on U.S. farms?
I did not know that, but it doesn't surprise me. And so people shouldn't feel guilty about getting a cut Christmas tree if they want one. Just don't do it. Just only have it for a week. That way it doesn't dry out and drop needles everywhere and also become a fire hazard.
And there are 15,000 Christmas tree farms in the United States. 15,000.
I did not know that, but there's one that's just off of Sorghum Mill Road, which is about 2 miles from me.
So. That is nice. And then if you get a live tree, you should not put it in the trash after Christmas. You should recycle it. And
which
like
we ever
in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You take it to the park, and there's a big pile, and then they take them and crunch them up.
Yeah. This year in Oklahoma, there are so many limbs. I can't tell you how many limbs there are in that park in Edmond, and there's one in Oklahoma City, too. And I suspect there will be one outside of Guthrie also, because we just have so many limbs from the ice storm. And then you add on all those Christmas trees, too. Wow. There you go.
Yeah, that's a lot. And here's something interesting for you. In 1971, the government concluded that Christmas tree tinsel made of lead was a health risk.
Right.
And they convinced the manufacturers to voluntarily stop producing lead tinsel. It's now made of plastic. So if somebody has a really old package of tinsel from before 1971, it's probably made out of lead. So be careful with that stuff.
So don't eat it. Because that's how you get sick from lead.
That's what we probably had as kids was lead tinsel.
I think we're okay.
I'm lucky to be alive.
Okay.
So there's our advice on getting Christmas trees. Sort of.
You want to hear a quote?
I do want to hear a quote.
An onion can make people cry, but there's never been a vegetable that can make people laugh. Will Rogers. You know where Will Rogers grew up, don't you? Where he was from.
Oklahoma, where the wind grows, growing past the pain.
Yeah, I've been to his home, and his home is called Woola Rock, and it's up by, I think it's up by Bartlesville. Anyway, I've been there. It's pretty neat. It's a log house, and it has some concrete logs on one end of it, but I digress. This day's vegetable is?
Celery.
And actually, it's why we don't grow celery. We do not grow celery.
Oh, my God.
You can't make
us. You know, every once in a while, you get, like, seeds for, like, pink celery to grow. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But celery, you know, it's one of those foods. The minute you say you're going to go on a diet, the first thing you think of is, I'm going to have to eat celery. Because celery consumes more calories from chewing than it gives you.
Right. But what would stuffing be without celery? I mean, people put it in stuffing.
Oh, I love celery. Yes.
It's delicious. My mom at Thanksgiving always put out a little tray that had different, you know, things on it. And the little stuffed celery boats, remember those?
Yeah.
With the pimento cheese and,
Or cream cheese or peanut butter.
What was that about?
That was just a way to deliver cream cheese, pimento cheese. Other than just dipping a spoon in the bowl and eating it, you could put it on celery. And look, it's a diet food.
It's a diet food on top of that. You've eaten about 4 tablespoons of whatever it is, depending on the size of the celery. Also, with little kids, you can put peanut butter on it and then put raisins on top and call it ants on a log. It's a way to try to get kids to eat celery. But celery is delicious, but Carol and I will not grow it. One time, did you know they gave us plants? I was at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show. It was before I wrote my book, so it would have been 2013. And I was speaking there on container gardens. And I got invited to a really fun party with some other writers and some editors. Uh-huh. Yeah. And one of the big things is a company had a red celery, and they gave us red celery plants that they wanted me to haul all the way back to Oklahoma. And I gave mine, to Amy Stewart, actually.
Isn't it called peppermint stick? Or something.
I don't remember now. It's been too long. And
anyway, celery takes forever to get to maturity. It takes 110 to 115 days, according to Murphy's website. And it doesn't like the heat. So you got to find 110 to 115 days where you don't have a lot of heat, which is not Oklahoma in the summer. It's not Indiana in the summer.
No. I don't know where they grow it. Do they grow it in California and Oregon? Is that where they grow it?
California, Florida. I think Florida in the winter. In the milder climates. And then, believe it or not, I was looking at a site, and then I lost the site, and I couldn't go back and verify, but said the third state was Michigan.
Huh. They must grow it in the summer.
Although, yeah, which would be fur enough. If you go fur enough north in Michigan, it gets fur enough north. I think it would be cooler in the summertime, and they might be able to grow celery. But we're not growing it.
No, it's seed, too, and it's also, it's just not easy. So I'm not growing it. And you buy organic celery.
I buy organic at the store. Now, you can grow celery root, sometimes called celeriac.
Yeah, which is different, and I've never grown it either.
It also takes forever and a day to mature.
Right.
And so, and it's the root. And I've known people that have grown that, but again, it's like, no. You could grow celery root and then store it. And then if you wanted it for stews and soups and things, then you use that root.
Or you could go to the grocery store and buy some if you want it bad.
Well, you know, there is that.
That's why God made grocery stores.
Exactly. You know, but, you know, in the time of COVID, I still find plenty of celery.
Yeah, I have so, no trouble finding celery in
the other thing is you take the base, you know, you get a big stalk of celery and you cut the base.
Yeah,
and
the
then
roots.
People, they put that basil plate in water and then try to grow more celery from it. What, have you tried that, Dee?
I haven't, but, you know, our friend Katie Elzer-Peters did that whole book on growing plants from stuff you buy and, you know,
from kitchen scraps.
Kitchen scraps, right. Basically. And yes, you can do it. It's like when you want to grow an avocado tree from an avocado pit, but I'm not going to. No, I have never done it. And I mean, I might do it with Maddie for fun.
Yeah, I don't think you should expect to get a whole nother big thing of celery.
No, you probably won't.
No waste kitchen gardening. I'm looking at it on my shelf over here.
We are also lucky that Carol is so organized and also records from her library. I record in my dining room.
So onions make you cry, and we just laugh at the idea of trying to grow celery.
I do have a tip about how you can keep onions from making you cry really quickly.
How's Ready? That, Dee?
Okay, so
cut
when you
them
cut
under
the,
water.
No. If you cut them in half and then you take the skin back and you just never cut off the root end and then you go ahead and chop from the top and you don't cut off the root end, they don't make you cry. And I learned that from a chef on TV, and I don't remember which one, but it absolutely works. So that's our big tip of the day. Don't cut off the root end.
I am going to absolutely try that tip.
It really does help.
Cut an onion.
It does.
Wow.
And by the way, it's okay to take off the first layer after the papery layer on the onion. One time I watched my best friend peel an onion for 10 minutes because she was just trying to get the paper off. And finally I said, onions are cheap. Just peel the next piece back.
I always do that. I always peel that next piece back.
Because it's so much easier. It takes like 2 seconds. And then you can just get the onion done and chop it. But she was being all, because our mothers were like, you know, don't waste anything. And I'm like, oh my goodness, just waste that one layer of the onion. It's no big deal.
Isn't there a scene there's a movie about Julia Child or whatever. Isn't there a scene where she's like practicing mincing onions and then ends up with a big pile of onions?
Yes, that's in Julie and Julia.
Yeah, that was pretty cute.
That was really cute. And she was trying not to bawl because she was doing it. Wasn't that when she learned how to cook in France? I think it was.
I think it was too. All right. Ready for the next quote?
Yes.
Plants are memories. Plants can make us feel proud. Plants tell stories by Greg Lodes.
Yes. And so we're discussing on the bookshelf this week, The Modern Cottage Garden, A Fresh Approach to a Classic Style. And
By Greg Lodes. You forgot to say that's why
I'm
sorry.
It's by Greg Lodes. I thought you guys, I was going to actually launch into the next paragraph, but I coughed, so it didn't happen. Anyway, Greg Lodes is the former editor of the English Garden magazine. He is now the editor of the Alpine Garden. And it's interesting because in this book, I didn't find the about author page in there anywhere, which is unusual. Maybe they just assumed everybody knew who Greg was. I did not, even though I used to take the English Garden. But anyway, the point is I read the book. And the book is good. It is very interesting because it mixes two different styles of gardening to create the modern cottage garden. And so the first style is the English cottage garden style, which he gives you a little history on. The English cottage garden style, most of us who sort of practice it, it was because, you know, people had cottages and they lived on big estates and they had to grow everything in them. So they had mixed everything together. Okay. And then that style was further refined by various people, including William Robinson and, Gertrude Jekyll. And that was done in the
Gertrude.
I did say Gertrude. Yeah.
I was going to say Gertrude Jekyll. And also, yeah. What's her name? The other one.
Yes. I don't remember. But I don't
Christopher
know who you're
talking Lloyd? About. Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, he's later. He's later. Yeah. So Gertrude and William Robinson, I guess they were Victorians or late Victorians, I would say, 1920s. And then, yes, after that, Christopher Lloyd's mother would have been part of that time period. Anyway, we're digressing. The point is you mix that style with the new perennial movement.
Right. And I just wanted to show you in the book, if you go to the very end, there is a biography of him.
Is there? Because I didn't. Okay. I must not have looked.
It's at the very, very.
Okay. End. It's the very last page. And so I missed it. And let's also say that Neil Hepworth did the photography and it's beautiful. Okay.
It
so
beautiful.
He mixed it with the new perennial movement. And so that's what he calls the modern cottage garden. And he explains why both types of gardening, for those who don't know about the new perennial movement, that's a definition of term for what Pete Udolf does and some other
right.
people too. So that movement incorporates grasses, ornamental grasses, and long blooming perennials with the cottage garden style. And the reason it's important is that the cottage garden style, especially when practiced in England, ends at the middle of summer. Like in June, at the end of June, their gardens are done. If you add on the new perennial movement, it gives you gardens all the way to November.
Yes, which is okay. lovely.
So his examples of those two different things are the herbaceous borders from Newby Hall. And I've been to Newby Hall because I went on this wonderful Yorkshire garden trip with our friend Lanny DeMerchant. And so Newby Hall's herbaceous borders are very, very famous. They're big, wide borders. And then he talked about the Scampston walled garden with the walled perennial meadow that was created by Pete Udolf. All right. I've been there too, because it was all part of that same gardening experience. It's a blending of those two movements. And then he tells you how you can do that in a small garden. And if you ever get the chance to go to England, assuming we ever get to travel again, which it looks like we might, because they're talking about vaccines now, two of them,
yes.
which is exciting,
yeah.
right? Go to Yorkshire, England, because I know that the Cotswolds get a lot of attention and I want to go there next. But Yorkshire is one of the most beautiful gardening places I've ever been.
And he lives in Yorkshire.
He does. He lives, I looked him up, Kingston upon Hull, which they also call Hull. And that's in East Yorkshire. So I have one bit of cautionary. This was actually published by our friends at Timber Press.
Right.
Which is
they
in
gave
the
us review copies.
They did. And this is and they live in the Pacific Northwest. You and I don't.
No, we live in the Midwest.
And much of the United States is not in the Pacific Northwest. And so the other thing I want people to keep in mind is because the Pacific Northwest has a maritime climate, parts of it do. And so the maritime climate is moderated by the ocean. Guess what else has a maritime climate? Guess where else?
England.
England, Yorkshire does. And so when he talks about blooming times of plants, those are not at all like they bloom in the middle of the United States or even the eastern part of the United States or the southern part of the United States. Only maybe the Pacific Northwest. The other thing I want to say is I didn't know this until I traveled into England. Their summers are super long. I mean, they're summer days. So they have more
right.
daylight than we do in the United States. And that's
yes,
something to
keep
in
north.
Mind. Right. They're further north. So in the summer, they have tons of daylight. And in the winter, it's really dark.
Yes.
Okay. So keep that in mind. When they talk about growth of plants, I've never seen plants grow like they do in England.
Right. And I've noticed that
ducks.
Too, even going to Seattle to see gardens, plants that they grow differently up there.
They do grow differently up there and they have wonderful gardens. And I sometimes wish I lived there, or even in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they have more rain, but I digress. Anyway, just keep those things in mind. However, I think the book is great. What did you think?
It is a very, I liked the book. I thought it was really nice and a lot of good examples. I like the way they've kind of divided it into three sections. So he talks about the whole garden movement in this first section. I'm turning to the book.
Yes.
And then how to create it, and then a year in the garden. So he goes through each of the seasons, what you would do. And then he's got essential plants A to Z, which I think most of them would work for you or for I.
Yes, almost all of them. Yeah.
So I was happy about that. So, yes.
The thing about the new perennial movement, and also especially the new perennial movement, they use a lot of plants that are native to the United States, but they've created cultivars of them.
Yes.
So a lot of the grasses are native to the U.S. A lot of the, just a lot of the plants are. And like sneezeweed, autumnal sneezeweed, it's native.
Yep.
But they use, they love, what is it, Morheim Beauty? So a lot of those plants, a lot of the plants that were in the United States as natives, the English have taken them and made, and the Dutch, and have made them into cultivars of the same plants. And Blooms of Bressingham is one of the places that did a lot of it, and he mentions that too.
Right.
I thought it was a really good book. It, I mean, a lot of the things in it I knew, but he presented them in a new way, and he talks about three seasons in a garden, how to have a garden for three seasons, which I've worked at for 32 years and just about have it done. So, you know, but I got a lot of new opportunities to plant some new things. And I actually saw a really new, neat hydrangea I think I'm going to replace Bobo with. But I digress. Let's go on.
All right. So we're going to go on. And now we're going to talk about garden trends.
Which is our dirt.
Yes. So everyone is coming out with their idea of trends for 2021, and perhaps the combining of the English cottage style with the new perennial movement is a trend. We don't know.
It's been a trend.
Over the next several weeks, our dirt is that we're going to talk about trends, but we're not going to tell you any trends today.
No, this is a tease. This is a tease, and we are going to link to a garden trends report, and we'll talk about various
garden
trends.
Design.
Yeah, this is from Garden Design.
And then Garden Media Group has their own trends. We're just going to talk through some of those in the weeks to come.
And I think that'll be really interesting as we go into the new year.
Yes, to see whether we are trendsetters or stuck in the rut.
I would say we are a little of both, but, you know, I don't care. Just be yourself. In fact, that's going to be one of our quotes next week. I sent it to you yesterday.
Okay.
Don't be anybody else but yourself.
No matter the trends, be yourself. That's right.
That's right, because who else are you going to be? Garden Commission. What's your Garden Commission?
So this week, when it's beautiful sunny day today on Monday, but it's supposed to be nice most of the week. I'm going to mow the lawn one last time with the mower blade set a half inch lower, and then I think my garden will be ready for winter. I'm going to put up all my Christmas lights because half my neighbors have theirs up. I probably won't light them until after Thanksgiving. But they'll be up and ready to go.
I think ours will be up by Thanksgiving, and we might light them that night, maybe, just because we all need something cheerful. I think I will plant an evergreen tree, and I have just the spot for it where I can see it from my bedroom window. I tried an evergreen there before, and I failed. But back then, I did not have a sprinkler system on that part of the yard. I do now. And I think I want like a blue spruce or something in this corner. And blue spruces get really large. And I may not see it to its maturity, but I'll get to enjoy watching it grow. I might choose an Arizona cypress. I really like blue evergreens.
So before you buy the blue spruce, look up to see there is a fungus of some kind that is attacking the blue spruces in Indiana, and they expect them all eventually to die.
All right, so I will plant an Arizona cypress because nothing is attacking it so far. I mean, really, really a blue spruce problem?
Yes, I don't know exactly the details. Maybe we'll do the dirt on that next
we'll
time.
We'll do that, yeah. We'll talk about that next time. Dag nabbit, that makes me sad. Anyway, we're going to wrap this up.
Okay, so we want to thank you for listening to The Garden Angelist. If you like our podcast, please tell your friends about us. Also, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode.
And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by others.
Yes, and be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites. And if you want to support us, use the affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the Garden Gate today. Bye until next week.
Bye.